Eisner later stressed that Ovitz was giving up an extremely lucrative position running CAA, so his remuneration had to be correspondingly generous. Not so much in salary, $1 million a year, but in discretionary bonus and stock option provisions, which provided for an eventual 5 million shares. The proposed deal provided that Eisner's total compensation could not exceed 75% of Eisner's, significant because Eisner was also in the process of negotiating a new employment agreement. Pegging Eisner's pay to Ovitz's necessarily meant that the more Ovitz made, the more Eisner could be paid. As usual, the sticking point was just what Eisner meant by partner. During their hike, Eisner offered him the title of president, as well as a board seat, but insisted on retaining for himself the titles of chairman and chief executive. Unlike Frank Wells, who had reported directly to the board, Ovitz would report to Eisner. He also refused to give Ovitz the title of chief operating officer, holding that back as something he could earn. Titles aside, Ovitz suggested that they just split the company's divisions and Eisner would run half of them, Ovitz the others, for a year. They'd stay in constant contact with each other but not interfere. Then they could assess the results. Eisner was noncommittal and never said explicitly that Ovitz would be running a division, even ABC. Still, Eisner promised that each of our operating divisions, including ABC, would report to him as president, which made Ovitz the de facto chief operating officer, whether or not he held the title. Eisner felt sure that however Ovitz wanted to interpret the notion of partner, he would be a clear number two. Ovitz later indicated that he understood that he'd be reporting to Eisner and that Eisner would be the senior partner. At the same time, I must say that at that stage of my life, with the success that I had, I don't think I looked at myself as junior or senior. I looked at myself as reporting to Michael Eisner, Ovitz later testified. And he stressed that in the end, it was all pretty much a matter of trust in his friendship with Eisner. At one point, Ovitz asked, "How can this work when you put me on top of people that have been there for a long time?" "You and I will be the bosses," Eisner replied, according to Ovitz. "They report to us, and we will make it work." "I relied on his word," Ovitz continued. "I relied on everything he said to me. I was less concerned about the specifics and the documentation issues because I trusted him. I trusted Michael Eisner totally, and I believe that he trusted me." And so, as Eisner and Ovitz and their wives reached Independence Pass, Eisner and Ovitz shook hands on their new partnership. Irwin Russell, who continued to represent Disney, and Bob Goldman, Ovitz's longtime financial manager, hammered out details of the agreement. This in itself was peculiar, since ordinarily Sandy Litvak, as Disney's general counsel, would negotiate on behalf of Disney. This may have reflected Eisner's perception that Litvak couldn't be trusted to negotiate a deal with someone coming in above him, but it also represented at least the appearance of a conflict of interest, since Russell was also negotiating Eisner's compensation. In any event, there was no denying that for such a complicated deal, it was rapidly negotiated and put together in a single weekend. Even though Eisner stressed how much Ovitz was giving up at CAA to come to Disney, there was no evidence that Ovitz actually disclosed his compensation as an agent, or that either Russell or Eisner